And a very good morning to you. Welcome to Sunday View. How are you doing? Hope you've had a lovely weekend. It is Sunday morning, July 21st, 2019. You might know already, but I'll tell you again. My name is Richie Allen, and for the next hour, we're going to be looking through the UK's tabloid and broadsheet Sunday newspapers and at one or two of the stories inside as well. Some interesting interviews to bring you as well, some snippets from the mainstream media. This is Sunday View. You can tweet the programme at any time between now and the end of it. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Welcome aboard. Welcome aboard.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv. It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, start the tweets. Look forward to hearing from you between now, as I said, and the end of the program. A lot of interesting things in the news this morning, not just in the newspapers. I'll bring as much of it as I can to you within the next hour. The program is live. It's just after 11 a.m. UK time, going right through till midday with you. Thanks for joining me. Love your company. Love it. Love hearing from you. And good morning to Liz Jones. Good morning to Snowflake Danny. Good morning, Danny. How you doing? Good morning. Good morning. Good morning to Gail. Good morning. Do you know, it's been an interesting morning. I came across an interesting gentleman on Twitter who maintains aircraft engines for a living. And he really does. This is his job. He's an aircraft engine ear, right? An aircraft engine engineer. And he's got an interesting point of view when it comes to contrails versus chemtrails, and I think you'll find it fascinating. And he's going to come on the program with me sometime in the next week, so I'll tell you more about that as we go. But he doesn't believe that what we see in our sky are contrails, so that makes him very interesting to you and me, because he maintains aircraft engines for a living. Oh yeah. Good morning to Paul Alawi. Good morning to Desmond Knox. Good morning, Desmond. Let's just jump even straight into the front pages of the papers. The Sunday Telegraph. Very interesting. Hunt, that's Jeremy Hunt, set to freeze Iran assets after it taunts UK. What sort of assets does Iran have? Is there anything left that could be frozen, that belongs to Iran? Sanctions have been levied against that country for decades now. A country that has never attacked anybody, has never threatened anybody. A country that minds its own business. What assets could be left to freeze? The Iranians must be absolutely bewildered. This is all, of course, about the Iranian seizure of a tanker that ran, or that showed, a British flag a couple of days ago. The Iranians were absolutely cheesed off, justifiably so, that an Iranian tanker was hijacked by a crack unit of British commandos off the course, off the coast even of Gibraltar. So the Iranians said, well, if you want to play that game, we'll play it. Hunt set to freeze assets after Iran taunts UK. Has Iran taunted the UK? Taunting? Do you want to hear what a taunting sounds like? This is a taunting.
Can we come up and have a look?
Of course not! You are English type, sir.
Well, what are you then?
I'm French! Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, you silly king?
What are you doing in England?
Mind your own business!
Yes.
If you will not show us the Grail, we shall take your castle by force!
You don't frighten us, English pig dogs! Go and boil your bottom, sons of a silly person. I'll blow my nose at you, so-called Arthur King. You and all your silly English kniggets.
Now that's a taunting. That is a taunting.
What a strange person. Now look here, my good man.
I don't want to talk to you no more, you empty-headed animal food trough whopper. I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberry.
Yeah, that's a taunting. My missus is French, as you well know, and that's how she speaks to me when we argue. There's nothing you can do in the face of that except run away. So then, this story in the Telegraph is about ministers drawing up plans to target Iran. But everybody is calling it the Iranian regime this morning. They're playing that old game again. The regime. It's the regime, man. It's the regime, man. So more sanctions being drawn up after the Iranians seized that British-flagged tanker in the Gulf. Jeremy Hunt, I can say Hunt, is expected to use a common statement today to announce a package of diplomatic and economic measures. Yeah. And apparently, the Telegraph claims that the UK might also push for European Union and United Nations sanctions to be reimposed on the regime, says the Telegraph. Yeah, right. Yeah. Let's hear from one or two commentators. And they really are at this regime crap, this regime shit this morning. The BBC and Sky. It's the regime. Anyway, Defence Minister Tobias Elwood, MP, was on Sky News this morning on The Ridge Show. Here's Tobias Elwood.
Well, firstly, we need to try and de-escalate this. We've seen a ratcheting up of tensions in the Middle East, not least with what's happened with the Montrose engagement only a week ago. We've seen the Norwegian and Japanese tankers already hit a couple of weeks ago as well. And as you imply, this is actually forming part of a wider geopolitical challenge that Iran is facing with the West. So our first and most important responsibility is to make sure that we get a solution to the issue to do with the current ship, make sure other British-flagged ships are safe to operate in this waters, and then look at this wider picture of actually having a working, proper, professional relationship with Iran. But this is a hostile act. Let's not dodge away from that. This is a serious matter for which Iran must recognise.
You hijacked their oil tanker first, you buffoon, Elwood. All right, and we know you're taking your orders from John Bolton, Yosemite Sam, that dickhead Yahoo, who, according to some UK newspaper reports today, is actually instructing the British government through secret channels. Imagine that. The defence and foreign departments are listening to John Bolton. And of course, John Bolton gets his orders from Israel, doesn't he? Leave Iran alone. It doesn't bother anybody. Right? Country was doing fine until we overthrew Mohammed Mossadegh in the early 1950s, 53. BP, of course, the CIA. Don't get me started on that. I'm tired of saying this stuff. Oh, Iran is no threat to anybody, and it doesn't want a nuclear weapon. Anyway, the presenter Sophie Ridge then asks Tobias Elwood, well, how dangerous is Iran? I wonder, does he answer that question?
Now, you served in Iran when you were in the army. You visited Iran.
You served Iran when you were in the army. Sophie Ridge is as thick as pig shit, like most presenters in the mainstream media. Served in Iran, did you? In Iran? When you were in the army? At what point was the British Army active inside Iran, Sophie? You blonde-haired bint. I don't blame her, by the way. They get them off an assembly line straight out of university. No brains. And they get their questions handed to them by their producers. You served in Iran. When was that? Did you dream it, love?
Iran as Middle East Minister. How dangerous are they?
How dangerous are they? Good question, right. Anyway, as about Tobias Elwood, did you serve in Iran, son?
I didn't, just to clarify, I didn't serve in Iran, was there, but I did visit as foreign minister. And
I visited as a foreign minister.
Very interesting to see the people of Iran are desperate for a better relationship with the international community. So our argument is with the regime itself on what they're doing, not just in this particular area.
The regime.
Of thwarting international business in the shipping lanes, but also its proxy negative influence in Syria.
Iran's negative influence in Syria. All right. Right, Syria, yeah. What about the UK's influence in Syria and the United States and Israel? What about the three amigos basically starting the Syrian crisis? Oh, I'd love to just be able to just possess the body of Sophie Ridge or Andrew Marr just for a second to tear the throat out of Tobias Elwood. Are you really going to start with this Iran interfering in Syria, Toby? Are you? Anyway.
In the civil war in Yemen, in Iraq, in Bahrain, in Lebanon as well. These are unhelpful interventions.
If you listen to Tobias Elwood, you'd eventually conclude that Iran was behind the Kennedy assassination. No challenge whatsoever from the presenter. Totally inept.
These aren't the acts of a nation that really should be trying to join the international community for the benefit of all. What they are doing here...
But Iran doesn't want to be a member of the international community. What Iran wants to do is just be left alone. To go about its business. To sell its oil. And to do its business. And to just get on with life. That's what Iran wants to do. But it can't because of the lunatic state of Israel and its interference in the affairs of Iran and all of that. That's what's going on, Toby.
Here is they are on the receiving end of changes in sanctions from the United States and they're lashing back out, probably to affect the oil price.
Are you worried that the US and Iran could be heading for a military conflict?
Yeah. Are you worried that the US and Iran... She didn't press him on her first question, which was, how dangerous is Iran? He wouldn't answer that question. Not because he doesn't know, because the answer is Iran is very, very capable of defending herself. And if you are laying the ground for a future bombing campaign, because remember, they're not going to invade with ground forces. They're not. If they do anything, it'll be bombing Iran. And to lay the ground for that, the last thing in the world you can do is tell the truth to the watching UK audience, which is Iran is very, very capable of defending herself. Now, Labour's Shadow Justice Secretary, a bloke called Richard Bergen, was also on Sophie Ridge's programme this morning. On Iran and Donald Trump, this was an interesting exchange. Richard Bergen on the crisis in Iran and the Strait of Hormuz. Here he is, Richard Bergen, Shadow Defence Secretary.
What we need to avoid is the kind of escalation and being dragged in by Donald Trump to something which could be very dangerous indeed. So what we really need to do as a country and a government is use our diplomatic weight, use our negotiating skill, really to get people around the table, also get the United States and get Iran back into the very important nuclear deal as well, because going away from that risks things really getting out of control.
But Iran didn't leave the nuclear deal, nor was it in breach of it. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, Iran has stuck to the deal to the letter, to the crossed T's and dotted I's. So Iran's done nothing other than honour the agreement. So Iran doesn't have to come back to any table. It was the United States, controlled by the Netanyahu regime, which decided to pull out of the agreement for no good reason. Let's be honest there, Richard.
I don't think any sensible person wants that.
I mean, you mentioned Donald Trump there. Do you think we're effectively being dragged into a conflict that is really between Iran and the US?
If we're not careful, then that could be the case. So that's why we need to take a deep breath. That's why we need to use our diplomatic weight. I think we can play a very positive role in this, and we can play a very positive role internationally. And our role is to speak up for conflict resolution, de-escalation, the nuclear deal, discussions about a whole range of things. But what we don't want to do is end up being just the messengers or sidekicks of Donald Trump and John Bolton. I'm encouraged by some of the things that Conservative MPs have said about this. I don't know what the next Prime Minister is going to say about this, and that does concern me greatly.
Well, we'll find out on Tuesday, won't we, about the next Prime Minister. Good morning to my great friend Phil Restino in Florida, by the way. Morning, Phil. Huge help, Phil, is with guest recommendations and with information. Now, Sophie Ridge asks the Shadow Justice Secretary, this is a Labour MP, remember, he asks him, are you choosing Iran over the United States.
And you talk there about Donald Trump, you talk there about John Bolton. Jeremy Corbyn tweeted yesterday to say Donald Trump tearing up the Iran nuclear deal has fueled confrontation. I mean, are you not worried that this just plays into some people's fears that Labour will side with people who aren't our allies against people who are our allies? I mean, Iran has seized a UK tanker here.
His answer is excellent. There are a bunch of... I won't say what I think about politicians because I say it all the time, so I won't repeat that. But his answer to this ridiculous question by Ridge is brilliant. She says, are you worried that this plays into the fears of people that the Labour Party and Jeremy Corbyn will take up with or agree with or support the enemies of our allies in our country? And his answer is excellent.
No, it's not about that. What it's about is trying to avoid the mistakes of the past. People will remember the great tragedy of Iraq, and I'm really ashamed that it was a Labour Prime Minister, Tony Blair, who sided with George Bush on that. I think Jeremy Corbyn and others got it correct on that. What we want to ensure doesn't happen is that the mistakes of the past aren't repeated, because the mistakes of the past cost many, many lives. The mistakes of the past made things worse and fueled terrorism and hatred, and that's what we don't want. We don't want to get in a situation where things get out of control. I think we're with the mainstream opinion on this, where we see we don't want it to ratchet up, ending up getting out of control, ending up with military action, because if we did, it could be even worse in Iraq, and that doesn't help anybody.
Good man. Yes. Yes, how dare people accuse Jeremy Corbyn of siding with the enemies of the UK? Whatever I think about Corbyn, I'll always be honest. Corbyn stood against the invasion of Iraq in 2003. He was a staunch protester and conscientious objector to that disgusting genocide, because that's what happened in Iraq. We know, I don't have to labour the point, you know what happened in Iraq. Went along with George W. Bush, Tony Blair, pathologically lied when he said to Parliament, Saddam has the capability of hitting us in 45 minutes. He was lying through his teeth. Pants was burning under the table as he was saying it. And he knew it was a lie. The man who sent a letter to Bush saying, we'll be with you no matter what, even if there's no evidence that Iraq has WMDs, even if there is no evidence, which of course there wasn't, that Saddam was providing material support to Al-Qaeda, which of course is nonsense because of the religious differences, completely on the other side ideologically. Saddam was to Al-Qaeda, but that didn't matter. Lies were told, millions died, millions more were rendered homeless. Well done, Richard Bergen. I just wish they'd be a bit more forceful. You know, it's nice to make the point in a gentlemanly way, but I wish some of these guys would take on the presenter, laugh at her, mock her in the live interview. Seriously, I don't mean bully, but I mean mock. Listen, love, are you seriously telling me you've got an issue with us not wanting to start a fucking war with Iran? Really? Rupert Murdoch's lass there sitting in your Sky News studio with your pretty fucking dress and shoes. Are you really asking me, should we just go along with the hairpiece in America who's being controlled by Benjamin Netanyahu, whose hand is so far up fucking Trump's arse you can see it next to his tonsils? Are you really telling us that we should get into a war with Iran? Come on, take them on. Go after them. These presenters, these shills like Sophie Ridge, these morons. Come on, let's have a bit. Go on the attack. Without bullying, go on the attack. Good morning to Connington, who says, good morning, Richie. It's great to have some company that is as unnormal as me. Conspiracy weirdos, he says. I'm not a conspiracy weirdo, Connington. Wash your mouth out with soap, son. Right. Good morning to Paul, who says, keep prodding Iran with a stick and it will eventually want a nuclear weapon. Andy Newman says, here was I expecting another Gulf of Tonkin incident as an excuse to start a war. Many people not believing for a minute that Iran attacked the Japanese tanker and all the rest of it. Good morning to Susan at RubyDragon1. How you doing, Susan? Friend of the programme. Base Ninja says, fishing vessel must have been destroyed by a large tanker. I thought the ship was Norwegian owned and it was flying a Union Jack. Well, that was my understanding of the ship that Iran has understandably hijacked. Because you can't, on the one hand, condemn the UK for doing it, and then give Iran a pass forward. Violence and hijacking is wrong, even if it is in retaliation. I would have advised the Iranian officials or the government, don't do it. Keep your powder dry. Don't do it. But look, they've gone down that road and I wouldn't condemn them. Danny says, when Iran closes the Strait of Hormuz, then the fun and games will start. Well, if they do that, Danny, the fun and games will start. David tweets, we can blame these evil warmongers all we want, but they couldn't do a thing without the willing killers for hire, ready to bomb, crush and shoot to order. Yes, David, yes, but most people who end up in the army are unsophisticated, poor people. Not stupid, not less intelligent than me or thee, but poor people who have got nowhere else to go. They get suckered into joining the army. That's my opinion. 21 minutes it is. Past 11 for Sunday, June the 21st, 2019. This is Sunday View on the Richie Allen Show. And my name is Richie Allen. How you doing? Are you well? Let's get down. Let's get right down with a bit of ELO and Jeff Lynne. This is marvellous. London ELO on the Richie Allen Show. 24 and a half minutes past 11 it is. Good morning if you're just joining the programme. You know what I'd love to do with Yosemite Sam John Bolton, the walrus? You know what I'd love to do with him? And you know I'm against capital punishment. I'd love to get a hold of Bolton and drop him just outside Baghdad or Tripoli or Idlib or Damascus or somewhere and leave him with only a wooden spoon and a packet of super noodles and say, on you go, son, on your bike. Let's see how long you survive. These warmongering maniacs. There you are, wooden spoon, packet of super noodles. Maybe, I don't know, maybe a tin of sardines, maybe. And say, you're on your own, pal. And, yeah. And just before he gets murdered and beheaded, just before he does, swoop in, rescue the mustachioed bastard, bring him back to Washington and say, well, have you changed your tune about invading countries that have never threatened or attacked the United States of America? Bastard. Good morning to William Henderson. How you doing, William? Who's listening to the programme in Aberdeen, in a hotel room with the missus. That sounds like a nice weekend in Aberdeen. William, hope you're well. Thanks for listening to the programme on your weekend breakaway. Good stuff. Hi to John Stott. ELO takes me back to my mum boogieing in our lounge in the late 1970s. We're still boogieing to Jeff Lynne and ELO. Went to see them twice last year. So I did. Twice. Once wasn't good enough. I went twice because Jeff is God. Let's keep going with the Sunday newspapers. The Sunday Times, the headline is Stop No Deal. Secret European Union drive to woo Boris. This is a load of nonsense in the Times. It alleges that European Union folks are secretly reaching out to Johnson to stop No Deal Brexit, right? Now, according to the Sunday Times, German, French, Dutch and Belgian officials are holding peace talks with two of Johnson's cabinet allies. There you go. I've said 1,000 times, it's the European Union and only the European Union that has to fear No Deal. Because when you sell much more into a market than that market sells to you, well, you've got more to lose. And I've said that 1,001 times, so I won't belabour it. The Sunday Express headline, Boris already hit by Remain revolt. Before he's even taken office, and that's if he takes office, he's the overwhelming favourite to win and to be named Conservative Party leader and therefore Prime Minister on Tuesday. But before he's even won that, the Sunday Express alleges that hardcore Remainer MPs in the Conservative Party have refused to pledge their loyalty to Bojo. That's what they're saying. And there's a hilarious story on the front page of the Mail on Sunday. The headline is, New Bed for Boris on the Taxpayer. New Bed for Boris on the Taxpayer. What does that mean? Well, the Mail on Sunday alleges that you and me will be spending thousands of pounds on furnishing number 10 if Bojo wins. The paper says Johnson will need new furniture, including a bed, because his estranged wife has kept all his belongings. That's his ex-wife. She's holding on to his belongings and won't give them to him. And his new partner, Carrie Symons, has made it clear she won't be lending him any of her furniture. So Boris will have to furnish number 10 with our money. I'd be quite happy to help with furnishing number 10 for Boris. You wouldn't wish it on anybody to get into any bed that had previously been used by Theresa May and her husband Philip. Let's be honest about it. There isn't disinfectant in the world that exists that could clean a bed that had been used by Theresa May. So to be fair, let's be honest about it. If you want to take some of my tax pounds and give Boris a new bed, I have no problem with it. On the front page of The Observer, Johnson warned, focus on Iran crisis or risk descent into war. That's on The Observer. Oh, let's go to the tabloids. Oh, on the front page of The Star on Sunday. I shouldn't laugh because violence is not funny. It never is funny. On the front page of The Star on Sunday, OAP beats up Tommy Robinson in jail.
What kind of fuckery is this?
Tommy, we thought you were hard, Tommy. We thought you were a tough guy. It's not funny. OAP stands for Old Aged Pensioner. Old Age Pensioner, by the way, if you happen to be listening overseas and you don't know. Tommy got the piss knocked out of him in jail by a 70-year-old con. Now, this could be monumental bollocks because it's The Star. But apparently Tommy was punched in the face by a 70-year-old man the day he arrived in Belmarsh. Tommy apparently came in, rocked into the prison, given it the big I am, and this old bloke who didn't know who he was smacked him in the puss and Tommy went down. Apparently. You've got to take it with a large pinch of salt because it's The Star. And you wonder how The Star has got insiders in Belmarsh. Presumably some of the guards are putting out this story. Bit of pushing and shoving apparently. And then a 70-year-old very hard pensioner decked Tommy with a punch to the jaw. Tommy should be out in about six and a half, seven weeks' time. He's in there for contempt of court, as you know. Chubby. Come on, Chubby. The guy's 70, mate. Come on. Come on, Chubby. Put your dukes up, mate. So Tommy got a smack. Sunday Mirror, MI6 probe Putin link to tanker trap. Now, this is horse shit. You could fertilise 550 acres of land with this story. The Sunday Mirror alleges that Vladimir Putin has used technology to trick the British-flagged tanker which was hijacked in the Gulf by Iran. So apparently the tanker was tricked by technology and was basically moved off course to help the Iranians seize it. Vladimir Putin, is there anything they will not blame Russia for? Yeah. England were beaten in the semi-finals of the netball yesterday, 51-48 or something like that, or 50-48 by New Zealand. I think it had to be the fault of Vladimir Putin. You see how it goes. Right, that's the front pages of the paper. Thanks for your tweets. Keep them coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Mark Best tweets, good morning, Richie. Can't Boris buy his own furniture for number 10? You'd have thought so, Mark. You'd have thought he'd have had enough to go to the British Heart Foundation furniture stores where second-hand furniture is sold on the cheap to punters like me and the money then goes to heart research. Right. Gail reckons that Tommy getting decked by a 70-year-old is probably an excuse, Richie. Tommy the tit, says Gail, probably wanted to be put in isolation. Paul tweets, I've a feeling that the Star story is true and that the OAP is a real journalist who'd taken offence to Robinson's claims of being one too. Possibly, Paul. Possibly. Lovely stuff. Good morning to Cartoon Drunk, who tweets, like in that Clint Eastwood spaghetti western film, shoot the rope just as he's about to be hung. Lovely stuff. Lovely. Right, let's move on. Good morning to Susan Tonkin. Good morning, Susan. How you doing? Base Ninja tweets, personally with John Bolton, I just repeatedly kick him in his nuts and poke one of his eyes. Bolton is evil personified with shit facial hair. Yeah, I won't throw any stones at Bolton's hair, nor his facial hair. Personally, I'm not in a position to do that, so we'll just move right on. Miss Michigan was stripped of her title over offensive social media posts. Little bit of American news. Little bit of news from America. Did you see this? A Michigan pageant contestant and fan of President Donald Trump was stripped of her title. She says she has been discriminated against because of her conservative political views. The woman's name is Kathy Zhu, a student at University of Michigan, and she was dismissed on Thursday as a Miss World America pageant participant. You see, if you win Miss Michigan, the winners of the state pageants then progress to run in the Miss America pageant or the Miss World America pageant. And it's a big deal if you're a pageant contestant, I suppose. Nobody else gives a shit, really. But anyway, she was due to go and contest Miss World America, but she has been booted out because of her social media. What has she said? Well, she defends the now-deleted tweets that she blames for her dismissal. Right. The first tweet dates back to 2018, in which Kathy Zhu went to a Muslim Student Association booth celebrating World Hijab Day, and she declined to wear a hijab when asked to. So she went to a Muslim Student Association booth on campus, and they said, "Hey, Kathy, do you want to wear a hijab?" And she went, "No." So she tweeted, "There is a try a hijab on at my college campus. There is a try a hijab on booth at my college campus." And then she tweeted, "So you're telling me that it's now just a fashion accessory and not a religious thing? Or are you just trying to get women used to being oppressed under Islam?" I don't see too much harmful with that tweet. But somebody else seemingly does. So the second tweet was a reply to another user, and she said, "Did you know the majority of black deaths are caused by other blacks? Fix problems within your own community before blaming others." Presumably she was replying to a tweet about a black person being shot dead by the police. Now, while the tweets may be construed as provocative, are they justifiably bad? Or are they bad enough to have her banned from Miss World America? I would say no, even though I wouldn't agree with her. Here's Kathy Zhu speaking to RT this weekend.
"I was accused of being racist, Islamophobic, insensitive language, all things that I completely decline. It really sucks that people are throwing the word racist out so often now, and it completely distorts the fact that people are actually racist. The political climate and tensions in the U.S. are very, very tense right now. And, you know, it's our choice to come forward and talk about these issues instead of just being, you know what, you're conservative, I don't want to talk to you anymore. We should, you know, have open discussions. You should really be diverse, not only diverse in color of your skin, but diverse in thought and mindsets and political affiliations or opinions. I just feel that this is such a bigger issue than just a pageant. It's an issue that people need to focus on, not being biased or prejudiced towards people with conservative values."
Yes, but it's not just conservative values. This isn't, you know, open season on conservative values. Each side of every debate is being programmed to think that they are being victimized. It's about listening to people and enjoying their company and talking to them like an adult, even if you don't like what it is they stand for or believe. And that's the way we used to be. We used to have friends that had ideas. I used to play a clip, a wonderful clip, from the film Porky's. I know you laugh out loud now when I say Porky's. And I don't have the clip to hand right now. But in the film Porky's, there's a Jewish character called Brian. Brian Schwartz, you might remember. And there's also a character called Tommy. And Tommy's a bit racist because he's got a dad that's racist. And his dad is violent and abusive and aggressive. And Tommy keeps calling Brian nasty names like Kike and stuff like that. And eventually they come to fisticuffs. And Brian, the Jewish kid, because he knows a bit of boxing, gets the better of Tommy. And there's a lovely scene when Tommy runs away after losing the fight, and two of his friends say to Brian the Jewish kid. Brian, he's an asshole, and we don't agree with what he says, but he's our friend. He's our friend. And the Jewish kid goes, yeah, I understand that, fair enough. The Jewish kid accepts that the two lads in front of him do not believe that he's worthless because he's Jewish, and they're happy to be Brian's friend, but they're also going to be Tommy's mate. And I look back at that, and I've used that audio to explain to people before. That's how it used to be. Nowadays, no. People have to be condemned. They have to be discriminated against. They have to be shut down. They have to be basically ostracized because of what they think. We're basically saying that in this paradigm, nobody has the right to be wrong. And that's incredibly dangerous. I don't see the tweets by Kathy Zhu as being totally offensive at all, right? She's entitled to her opinion about the hijab, and she's entitled to her opinion about violence in America, even if you disagree with it. But she's been kicked out of Miss World America, because this is the way things go now. But I don't agree with that, and I'll always argue against that. My friend Phil, who I mentioned in Florida, and Phil knows quite a bit about the military, on my point that it is poor people who end up in the military, Phil says, Richie, I agree. The poor sods in the army, for the most part, have nowhere to go. Nowhere else to go, and it's a way out for them from an even worse situation. However, then there's the bullies and killers who dig it and get off on legalised murder. Then, of course, you have the Christian Zionists and the knuckleheads who buy into the whole neocon Fox News propaganda. Excellent, Phil. Absolutely spot on. This is the Richie Allen Show, Sunday View. It's 20 minutes to midday on Sunday, July 21st, 2019. Danny tweets, it's called offence archaeology when you troll Twitter looking for offensive comments that were made years ago. Yes, yes, that's right. And this is why I say, and I say again, if you are planning to apply for a job in the very near future, get onto your Twitter account and delete everything up to the last few weeks. Or even up to the last few minutes, if necessary. It will be used against you. All right. All right. All right, I said. Okay, let's move on. What have we got? What else have we got? We've got some interesting stuff. Now, Greg Dyke, dear listener, is a former BBC Director General. He's not a woman with a short haircut. And he's a regular on a panel show on Sky News called The Pledge. And The Pledge has a panel of regulars like Rachel Johnson, Bojo's sister, Nick Ferrari, LBC, and June Sarpong, among others. Greg Dyke is worried about the cashless society and how the UK is rushing headlong into the same cashless society. Here's the opening salvo from Thursday's programme, Greg Dyke on the cashless society. Let's have a listen.
This week, the new £50 note came into circulation. But how long will we be using it? Britain is shifting to a cashless society at one of the fastest rates in the world, according to a recent Bank of England report. It says that Britain is only a few years behind the most cashless countries like Sweden, Finland and the Netherlands. In 2017, debit card transactions actually overtook cash payments in Britain, and more than 5 million people hardly use cash at all. By repute, even some street buskers and beggars now want you to pay by card. The result is that the banks are closing down branches and getting rid of cash machines because they say fewer people are using them. Now, this suits the banks because both are expensive to maintain. But is it really what we want? As someone who doesn't feel comfortable without a wadge of cash on my person, am I just an aging Luddite?
Yes.
Yeah. Or, as campaigners argue, are we all being nudged in the direction of the cashless society by the financial institutions, not because it suits us, but because it suits them?
Good stuff from Greg Dyke. He isn't a Luddite, of course. Post offices and banks are being taken out of rural areas, out of small towns and villages, and even coastal areas that wouldn't have a big influx of tourism. Because ultimately, the plan is, as has been discussed many times on this programme, is to relocate people into urban settlement zones or human settlement zones in massive cities. That is the truth. Interesting that he's on to this. It is getting out of control in the UK. Here's June Sarapong. She's on the same programme, June Sarapong. She's responding to Greg Dyke. And she's worried that cashless goes way beyond contactless cards or your mobile phones. It goes to implantable chips. Some people are starting to wake up, aren't they?
You know the thing that worries me with a lot of this sort of cashless society and the fact that we're sort of heading in that direction is if you look at what's going on in Sweden, where we're now getting into the chip territory, I don't like that. That frightens me because all your information is on your person and it's dangerous. You know, that's where you can get people that are, you know, they're wealthy, they're being... what's the word, you know?
Robbed, hijacked, compromised. All of the
yeah. above.
Raided, their details are being raided.
I just
what,
think
for
it's,
the chips?
Yeah. It's scary territory.
I go to Sweden quite a lot because I've got a daughter who lives there and it is incredible. I mean, nobody has any cash.
Nobody's any cash in Sweden. But Sarapong is right. The chip, of course, leaves people wide open to exploitation by other people. You know, if you do have an implantable and all your data... your financial data is on it and you use your hand to make payments and stuff like this, as we've seen. But of course it goes way beyond that, because the next step then, as Elon Musk has discussed last week, is the chip goes into your brain and there's an interface and you're connected to a computer, to an app on your phone, and that becomes even worse. But if you go contactless completely, it makes it very easy. And I know we've said this quite a lot in the last 2 weeks, but it makes it easy for this country to go down the road of the Chinese social crediting model, which is, you can't go to that concert, by the way, because you've not been a good citizen. And I won't labour that point today. I'm doing very well not labouring certain points. Cashless society, of course, is the ultimate control. And it's happening. It's happening. Cork, as I said before, the Irish city, famous old, great old city. Cork is striving to become the first Irish cashless city, and it's getting there, very close to it. The lack of control, people will be powerless in the face of a cashless society. Of course they will. Let's move on. Here's a very important story about a man called Ed Bridges. And Ed has launched a claim in the High Court against the Home Office and his police force in South Wales. About what? About facial recognition. Yes, Ed Bridges has taken a case against the Home Office and the police because he was filmed in public without his consent by the police using facial recognition technology, which is hugely problematic. He contends that the technology breaches data protection law, but it's also racist and sexist because it fails to distinguish effectively between different women or ethnic minority groups. Mr. Bridges was basically doing a bit of Christmas shopping outside of his office at Cardiff University in December 2017 when he spotted a police van with a camera on top. And he told the Mail on Sunday, "I didn't think anything of it until I was close enough to read the words facial recognition technology as they were printed on the van." When you were close enough to the van to read that, it will have captured your biometric face data several times over. "That struck me," said Ed Bridges, "as an invasion of my privacy." He didn't think any more of it at the time, but in March of last year, 2018, he took part in a protest outside Cardiff International Arena against an arms fair, and he saw the same bloody van with the same facial recognition cameras. So there he is, university worker, outside Cardiff International Arena. There's an arms fair going on inside. Disgusting, right? Yes it is. And the same bloody van with facial recognition cameras was working. And he said, did Mr. Bridges, and I think he's very shrewd, he said, "I felt this van was there to discourage people from using their right to protest." Of course it was, Ed. Be Jesus. Of course it's there to discourage you. We're watching you with our facial feckin' recognition cameras. So Anne Diamond, formerly of TVAM, and Michael Booker, now I like Michael Booker, great writer, former of The Telegraph, and these days he edits The Daily Express. So Ann Diamond and Michael Booker were on Sky News this morning discussing this. Hugely interesting.
What do we think of facial recognition cameras that
bad.
Are all over the place?
I don't mind it.
I don't mind it either because you think you give up so much of your personal data and your photographs anyway through a lot of the stuff we do voluntarily.
Well, the police is right. It's never actually been enshrined in law. It's never been discussed in Parliament, but the police are now using them all over the place.
Never discussed in Parliament, never enshrined in law, but the bastard police are using them all over the place without a leg to stand on legally. Thanks for pointing that out, Ann Diamond.
Just when they're monitoring, riots or demonstrations, but that's when they are used most. But just in ordinary everyday life. The group Liberty, campaign group Liberty, and this young man here, Ed Bridges, who says that he felt, he twice was out and about and spotted the fact that he was being watched by facial recognition cameras. He just thought this is an invasion of privacy.
But in terms of that, it's going to see his face, scan it, and presumably see that he's not a person of interest therefore ignore him.
This is interesting because we live under the belief that these things are really good at their job, but apparently they're particularly looking at young white males. They're not very good at facially recognising females at all. I don't know why. Maybe they've just perfected the facial recognition software in a certain way to look for the most troublesome in society, which are apparently young white males. And that's what. So the idea that they're accurate is apparently they're not. 80% of the time they are inaccurate.
Yeah.
And they're watching us all the time. No, it's not.
But it's an invasion of privacy.
Well, I do, yeah. I just don't like to mean the idea of being watched all the time. I know it's not that nothing to hide, nothing to fear thing, but it's just, if they are 80% wrong, then that's not a great start.
I just wonder
is it?
If we all get our knickers in a twist over it a bit too much, and I may be absolutely wrong.
Oh, you're wrong, all right.
Absolutely wrong. But, we've all got...
That's
the point I was trying to make.
Whether you're Android or iPhone or anything else, this is all monitoring you. It's listening to you.
He makes a good point there, Stephen Dixon. He looks at his iPhone and he gives a nod towards Alexa and says, well, we've made a rod for our own back anyway, right? We use our smartphones with the cameras on them, our laptops. We talk to Alexa even though we know that Google is listening in. It's admitted it. So why bitch about the facial recognition? Now, he's wrong, but he's got a point, right?
It is.
And monitoring.
But that is a choice we make. That isn't a choice we make, the fact that they're going to be watching us all the time. And they could, for some reason, believe, 80% wrong, remember, that you could have done something or a suspect.
Good stuff from Michael Booker. You make a conscious choice to use Alexa, even though you know you're being listened to. You don't make a conscious choice when you go to a demonstration against an arms fair and they rock up in their police vans with their facial recognition. Right, one more story to do, and it's an important story. Before we do that one more story, which is an important story, please listen to this.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Thank you very much. Please do, if you haven't done before, richieallen.co.uk, PayPal or bank account. This is the first time in months that I've made an appeal. Please support the programme. Now, final story. And a very interesting one indeed. CNN News, which Donald calls fake news. Brilliant interview over the weekend with a man called Michael Fisten. Michael is a former detective, former police detective, and a former private investigator. In fact, he might still be working as a private investigator. And he did an interview with CNN on Saturday evening, yesterday, and during the interview, Michael Fisten, the detective, said to CNN that once girls lost their braces, they were too old for Jeffrey Epstein. The private investigator, who spent 10 years tracking Jeffrey Epstein, claims that he met with a 13-year-old victim who looked like she was 9 years old. He said Epstein had a predilection for underage girls, but not only that Epstein's friends and his colleagues, the people he hung out with, must have known that they were meeting Epstein with these girls because these girls were always present. They were children. Have a listen to some of this. This is Michael Fisten speaking with CNN over the weekend. It's dynamite stuff, it really is.
Once these girls lost their braces and their pubescent look, and they started becoming 16 years old or 17 years old, They were too old for him.
Because he was a filthy, rotten paedophile, right? Right, listen to this. Listen to what comes up next.
So then he started using him for recruiters.
So after raping these girls, they got to 16. They were too old. Their braces were gone. They looked too much like young women and not children. Epstein used them to recruit other girls.
To bring the younger girls.
Epstein did plead guilty in 2008 to two state charges, including procuring a person under 18 for prostitution, a charge so demeaning to the children he victimized, Fiston says it silenced many of them.
These were girls that were not of age of consent in the state of Florida. They couldn't be prostitutes.
One victim told Fiston she was just 13 when it started.
But she looked like she was 9. And she started telling me the whole story about how, you know, she tried to live a good life. She was blaming herself for what Jeffrey did to her. And she was in such pain, this girl, that, listen, nothing really fazes me after spending like 13 years in homicide. Nothing really fazed me anymore. But that really fazed me. I mean, I teared up during this.
Court documents obtained by CNN detail how Epstein intimidated, frightened, and threatened potential witnesses against him, including the girls he had abused. The U.S. Attorney's Office knew the FBI was investigating, but chose not to prosecute.
And on that intimidation, Michael Fiston, the detective, told CNN, I won't play you the rest of the clip, I don't need to play it, but he said that Epstein effectively employed many detectives and private detectives to go after the women, but to make their presence known, so that the young women would know that Epstein's private investigators were following them around, to intimidate them into silence. This is Jeffrey Epstein, friend of the Clintons, friend of Donald Trump, friend of rock stars, billionaires, philanthropists, friend of Prince Andrew, the Queen's son. All of these people, Michael Fiston alleges, must have known that Epstein was in the presence of very, very young girls, children effectively. Well, what's going to happen with Epstein? Is he going to die, or is he going to get off? Is he going to get away with it? We'll find out, won't we, in the coming weeks and months, and we'll watch it closely. That pretty much is it for Sunday View on richieallen.co.uk. My friend Graham Booth might very well be. I've not seen Graham on Twitter this morning. That's because Twitter has changed, and I'm not seeing any updates from the people I follow. I'm just not seeing them. Twitter has changed. It's weird, and it's not working as well. But Graham might very well be about to do a programme on triggerwarning.tv where he'll be looking at the news himself in his inimitable fashion. There you go, easy for me to say. I love listening to Graham. Check him out at triggerwarning.tv, the Trigger Warning YouTube channel, full of really interesting commentary from Graham and Hayden Hewitt, of course, on the ongoings of the day and the week. Graham Booth, triggerwarning.tv. If he's on, watch him. I'm going to the cricket. Is where I'm going. I'm going to Old Trafford, which is just around the corner. It's just around the corner, Old Trafford. And I'm going to watch Lancashire against Durham in the blast. Yeah. Looking forward to that. So I am. You have a brilliant rest of your Sunday. I'll be back with you tomorrow on YouTube at 9:30 a.m. where I will be looking through the UK's daily newspapers. And of course, the Richie Allen Radio Show returns tomorrow at 5 p.m. And I've got an amazing array of guests lined up for you next week. So it's a busy old week for me and for thee. All right? All right. Closing the programme out with the one and only Cher. And Walking in Memphis. Look after yourselves and one another. Speak tomorrow. Bye.